Jason Lessel. Jason is a graduate student from the Department of Soil and Water Science at the University of Florida, and he'll be completing his doctorate next spring. The title of his paper is Effects of Phosphate Rock on Long-Term Arsenic Hyperaccumulation by Teres Vitata.
Thank you. So I'll give a brief overview, some background on arsenic, toxicity, sources, and then I'll go into some phytoremediation using the fern, followed by my experiment design and results and conclusions. So as you're well aware, arsenic, it's a metalloid, element 33. It's highly abundant. You'll find it everywhere, often associated with sulfide minerals. It's extremely toxic to both humans and plants, causing a wide range of maladies, ranging from acute to cancerous. And during the period in the United States between 1850 and 1950 was called the Golden Age of Arsenic. Now, this period, there was a huge explosion of arsenical use, albeit for medicines to cure you or as pesticides to kill what needs killing. So interesting dichotomy there. Sources of arsenic, the pervasive use of these pesticides, of course, they build up in the soil. In Florida, there was extensive use of dipping vats, well over 3,000 of these vats, each containing roughly 6,000 liters of this 1,000 milligram per liter arsenic ticicide. Here you can see the cow going through one of these vats. Treated lumber is also a significant source, CCA wood, creosote treatment. And, of course, arsenical herbicides are still used in citrus industries, turf, golf courses, things like that. So in Florida, the Department of Environmental Protection has a cleanup level of 2.1 milligrams of arsenic, so very low. Now, if you go to any area with treated lumber and test the soil around that area, you're going to find elevated levels. This is an apartment complex in Gainesville, Florida, and I tested the soil right outside some of the doorways to these apartments, and they range from 22 to 140 milligrams, so on average about 50, you know. And so you're talking about 25 times the cleanup level, so extensive contamination. And here is a plume of arsenic that was associated with a dipping vat also in Gainesville. So you can see the size of contamination that can be associated with those vats. So there's a large need to do cleanups. So as far as phytoremediation is concerned, one method with using Teres vitata, which is a perennial fern, and it translocates high quantities of arsenic to the above ground biomass. Typically, you'll see 20 to 60 times that. So, for example, for 100 part per million soil, it wouldn't be untypical to see 2,000 to 6,000 parts per million in the frond tissue. Obviously, the advantages are it's much more cost-effective. It preserves the environment, fairly easy to install, and you get some level of soil stability. Of course, you are limited by the rate of growth. It's a long-term commitment, and you can only remediate as far as the roots can get. So some of the problems with previous experiments with Teres vitata are that a lot of the estimates are coming from containerized experiments. They're shorter growing periods, or there's just poor husbandry practices. These graphs here at the bottom were developed from a paper in 2009 where they modeled the time frame for remediation. For a soil that contained roughly 23 parts per million, they estimated about 185-year time period for complete remediation. A higher contaminated soil was anybody's guess. So this kind of becomes a hard sell. So in order to really fully evaluate the remediative capacity of Teres vitata, I wanted to do a long-term study under more natural conditions. And I also wanted to maintain a low phosphorus, low phosphorus availability in the soil. So I wanted to keep phosphorus low in hopes that this would induce phosphorus acquisition responses by the plant, i.e. you'll get deeper root systems and higher translocation rates of arsenic in turn. And to do this, we utilize phosphate rock as a soil amendment, which is very insoluble and could potentially last for decades. And, of course, I modified some of my harvesting practices to facilitate faster regrowth. Now, I collected three different soils from the area, mixed them with 15 grams per kilogram phosphate rock, and there was two control plots set up, one with no phosphate rock and then a plot that contained no plants. So just to give you an idea of some of the soil characteristics, we had a alkaline pH and two acid pHs and a moderately contaminated site at about 130 and then two lower contaminated sites, and there was some variability with soil texture and CEC as well. Now, to conduct the experiment, I constructed raised beds that were 1.2 meters wide by 0.3 meters deep. The soils were filled into four quadrants, one soil per four beds, and then nine plants per quadrant, 36 plants per soil, 96 plants for total. These were mulched to setting up an irrigation system, and the phosphate recommended soils were fertilized with only a nitrogen and potassium, the control soils with just a general soluble phosphorus fertilizer. So samples were taken at the time of planting and in 6 months intervals, at which time above ground biomass was harvested. This was done three times. So these results are the culmination of 18 months of study. I cut all of the mature fronds, leaving the fiddleheads for regrowth, and here's just a picture of a fiddlehead. So frond biomass, which is what I'll refer to it as, to give you an idea, most of the fronds were well over a meter in length. One plant could consist of anywhere between 20 and 30 individual stems, and here's just a picture of one of the plots. So to analyze the samples, standard, we dried the sample, analyzed by atomic absorption, and I analyzed phosphorus with the molybdenum reaction. So over the course of three harvests, we can see that this is just total mass. We had a general increase in biomass over the course of three harvests, as opposed to the control plants, which we had a general decline. Now, to compare with some other studies that have done subsequent harvests, I looked at three that I could find, and in all three, harvestable biomass went down quite significantly following the first harvest. So this study shows the first, example of an increase over time. So these plants seem to be doing better over time, growing stronger and faster. As far as the frond arsenic concentrations, they were significantly higher in the phosphate rock amended treatments, in many cases almost two times as much arsenic, which led to much higher biological concentrations. So, roughly about two times higher in the phosphate-treated soils. So to try to figure out what the difference was in between the control plants and the phosphate rock amended plants, I looked at total phosphorus in the frond tissue, and we found significantly less phosphorus in the plants growing in the phosphate rock, which is what we would expect. The phosphate rock is very insoluble, so they're going to be growing in a very limiting environment in that regard. Now, we looked at root biomass and found that in the phosphate rock amended soil, the plants had greater root mass in the top and the bottom parts of the soil. So this P-limiting environment also increased root biomass, which in turn led to greater arsenic removals at both depths. So we're getting faster remediation at the surface, faster remediation in the deeper parts of the soil. So overall, we saw in the CCA soil, which was the 130 parts per million, we saw an 18% reduction of arsenic in the control, almost 25% reduction with the phosphate rock amendments, similar results with the other contaminated soils. I also did a sequential extraction looking at where these pools of arsenic are being extracted from. We wanted to look at the soluble fractions, which would represent the sulfate and the phosphate, and then some of the iron aluminum bound fractions, and then the nitrogen. And in all cases, we saw a reduction in all pools, so showing that this fern isn't going to just take the most soluble fraction, it's going to take from all, so you could potentially get more complete remediation. So in this table is comparing some previous experiments with comparable arsenic contaminated levels. And in this first column, I have the plant spacing that they used in their experiment, followed by the average biomass of that plant in the span of a year, followed by the amount of total arsenic taken up by a single plant, and then based on that experimental spacing, how much arsenic they could expect to take in a year's time on a hectare basis. So averaging those values and then comparing them to the values that I got in my experiment, I found that the plants were roughly 5 times bigger than previously published reports, that they were taking up almost 5 times as much arsenic, and that based on the experimental spacing, you could expect almost a 9 times faster remediation. So we concluded that the phosphate rock translated into more biomass, in some cases as high as 235 grams per plant per year. And the low P environment seemed to facilitate higher arsenic concentrations in the frond and deeper root mass, so you're going to get more remediation in deeper into the soil. Looking back at those models that I looked at in one of the first slides that I have here, if I were to overlay the data that I accumulated for two of the lower contaminated soils, it would be plotted on this line. And then if I use that model to estimate time of completion, we're looking at about 4 years. And originally, they had estimated 185 years, so it's quite a significant decrease in that. And then looking at the higher contaminated site, we see a similar trend, so going from who knows how long to about 5 years. So all in all, we're looking at a much shorter remediation period, hundreds of years down to just years. So thank you.
Okay, we have a couple minutes for questions. Are there some questions?
What are your normal background levels of arsenic in the area that you were sampling from?
Background?
Yeah, natural
background. Non-detectable. Yeah, I mean, all this arsenic concentration was anthropogenic, so and there is, I mean, this soil is so sandy in Florida that you're not really going to see much. Well, it's done in the fact that you're not adding any fertilizer. So these soils are already very deplete in phosphorus. So if you were to grow any kind of any, you know, use the soil to grow anything, you would have to add fertilizer.
But your control soils
had fertilizer.
But they have the same amount of substrate as the soil plus the rock.
It's the same amount of soil. I couldn't fertilize with the same amount of soluble phosphorus with a fertilizer as what was coming off the phosphate rod. There was no way to really determine that.
So I guess I don't understand exactly what the purpose of adding the phosphate rod.
Well, it's to give the plants a source of phosphorus that's not immediately available. So they have to use root exudates or other mechanisms like increased root biomass to mineralize the phosphate rock. And in the process of mineralizing that phosphate rock, they're also going to be mineralizing the arsenic that's bound up in the soil. And because it's a P-limiting environment, you're going to get an increase in total rate of phosphorus uptake. As opposed to the control soils, which had just, you know, a 6-4-6 fertilizer, they have a readily available, large pool of immediately available phosphorus, so they're not going to have to go through all of those steps that the plants with the phosphate recommended are going to. Thus, they ended up with less arsenic, but higher phosphorus concentrations in the front.